Care today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Thank you, everybody, for your messages. It's greatly, greatly appreciated. You're all very, very kind. Thank you so much. Right, now, the number of victims of crime who were referred to mental health services has risen by 102% last year compared to 2020. That's according to the Crime Victims Helpline. It says the increase is due to the impact of COVID-19 had on service users. And it's just issued its annual report published yesterday, recording 4,967 contacts in 2021. Its executive director is Michelle Puckhopper, and she joins me now. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Colm.
Thank you for joining us. I hope I got your name. It's Puckhopper, isn't that correct?
Perfect. It's perfect, yeah.
Right, thank you indeed. You write in your opening message to your report that resilience is a term that has taken on new significance over the past few years. People, organisations, governments and communities faced with unique and unexpected challenges as COVID swept across the globe. The fear, anxiety and uncertainty is not unlike the experience of becoming a victim of crime and having your world turned upside down. 4,967 contacts in 2021, and I'm sure, unfortunately, that might be just tip of the iceberg, Michelle.
Yes, certainly. You know, what we have seen across 2020 and 2021 is, you know, the Crime Victims Helpline provides emotional support and information about the criminal justice system. And we also signpost people to other services and supports that can help them. And what we saw from 2020 and 2021, that even though crime rates were down, you know, contacts to the helpline were up, and as well, the calls were longer. People were more distressed, and people were really looking for extra support as they made their way through the pandemic. And then on top of that, they became or were a victim of a crime.
Yeah, and I noticed there first of all, to explain to people what the Crime Line does. You were established in 2005, and what you do.
That's right. So the Crime Victims Helpline operates the 116006 helpline for victims of crime. We're a national service. Now, the phone number 116006 is a little unusual, or some people aren't familiar with it, but what it is, it's the 116006 phone number has been set aside by the European Union for victims of crime to get support. So if it is, you go to any EU country and you dial 116006, you will be connected to the victim support services in that country. So the Crime Victims Helpline, we operate that number in Ireland. And what we do is we do kind of three things. One is we provide emotional support. We just listen. And in 2020, that was, you know, most people were ringing us to get information about the criminal justice system. And kind of the second most common reason people were contacting us was for that emotional support. So again, in 2021, we saw a shift in that, and a lot more people were contacting us just for emotional support rather than kind of information. And then the third thing that we do is we signpost people to other services and supports that can help them. So Ireland has a lot of different organizations that help victims of crime. A lot of them are highly specialized. They're for victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, homicide. So we try to get people connected with the best service that can help support them through their journey to recovery.
29 or 28 different types of crime, including coercive control. And we were just discussing that in the papers this morning and have been discussing it on the programmes here with Ciara and Owen over the last couple of days in regards to that appalling case where former Garda Paul Moody is now serving a 3 years and 3 months jail sentence, but expected to be out in 18 months or whatever else in regards to that. People may be appalled. It's another debate, another discussion for another time in terms of the level of the crime. But in particular, coercive control, which is so prevalent throughout society. And to go back to a remark I made earlier, that the cases that are coming to the attention, either in the courts or yourselves, are unfortunately only the tip of the iceberg, we feel.
That's right. Now, the Crime Victims Helpline, we do record when people contact us about crimes that are domestic violence related, so, you know, domestic violence crimes can be very wide-reaching: criminal damage, theft, burglary, harassment, stalking. You know, so there's a lot that can go into the power and control dynamics of an abuser. But we've just recently started tracking coercive control because we're crime victims helpline, so our focus is really on crime. And, you know, coercive control has just recently been made a crime. So that's why, you know, we see that 39 contacts are related to coercive control. So it will be very interesting to see as we move forward, as the awareness about this crime, and that, again, it's not okay, and it's very serious. So it'll be interesting to see if we get more contacts or how that kind of develops. Like you're saying, it is tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, I mean, it is unfortunate and it's awful that this is happening, and that the cases that we've seen, a few high profile cases around coercive control. But I think as well, at least it is raising awareness about that this type of behavior is not okay. And what we see in the helpline is the second most common crime that people are contacting us about is harassment. And so this is often neighbor disputes. And we see this kind of similar type behavior in terms of hundreds and hundreds of text messages, phone calls, emails, and it's very difficult to get away from it. You know, it's very difficult to make the behavior stop. And again, the harassment, when it's not somebody harassing you, who, if you don't have any kind of intimate partner relationship with them, if you're not a family member, there's no orders as well to make that person stop. All you can really do is you make a report to the Gardaí and hope that that is enough to get the behavior to stop.
All right. Now, we'll give out the number again towards the end of the interview, and that you're contacted from at home and abroad. But I'm interested in a section in your report which refers to restorative justice, which says mm-hmm. that Crime Victims Helpline believes that victims of crime deserve as much choice and empowerment as possible. What is that restorative justice about?
Yeah, so restorative justice is the idea that rather than punishment for offenders, they should look to repair the damage that they have done. So this is often, in Ireland, this is often done with youth offenders, with young people. So the idea is to, rather than, again, punish or put somebody, you know, into a prison-like situation, it's to get them to be aware of the impact of their crime and to really do good or make up for the harm that has been committed. So, you know, in Ireland, restorative justice has often not included the victim, unfortunately, for a variety of reasons. But there are victims who really want to confront or sit down with the person who has harmed them to either ask questions or to let them know how, you know, their crime has impacted them, how their life has been impacted. So what we're, you know, the Crime Victims Helpline would really like to see, again, victims more and more centered in that process. And it's not for everyone. And what we want, though, is the choice. So if somebody wants to sit down, wants to have a mediated conversation with somebody who has harmed them, you know, we want that to be a choice for them. Because, you know, I've been working with victims for a very long time, and often within the criminal justice system, and you'll talk to victims about justice and what they want, and so often they want things that the criminal justice system can't give them, right? Some people want an apology. Some people want an explanation. Why me? And those are things that, again, the criminal justice system isn't very well equipped in how it typically runs to give victims. And so it really is about choice. What do victims need to feel like they've received justice and that they can move on from what's happened to them?
Indeed. And 3% of your complaints came from Kildare, I note, on your annual report. If anybody has been impacted by a crime, and the full range of crimes is revealed in the report, indeed, and it's everything and anything is covered. 535 for assaults, harassment, criminal damage, rape, sexual assault, 111, theft, 110, fraud online, 86, and a goes on, burglary, harassment, as Michelle mentioned there, road traffic accidents, coercive control, 39 complaints. I certainly feel that that's just tip of the iceberg. Mm. Blackmail, extortion, robbery, car theft, arson, possession, sharing of child abuse images, child abuse, human trafficking, abduction, all that have been referred or have people have contacted the Crime Victims Helpline about. And if you'd like to get in touch, Victims Rights Alliance, it can be it's the Crime Victims Helpline is a member of the Victims Rights Alliance. It can be contacted on this number, 116-006. Now, that's an EU-wide number, but once you ring it, you will be referred to the Ireland branch. 116.
It rings directly through to the Crime Victims Helpline when you ring from Ireland.
Right. 116-006. You can text 085-133-7711. I'll repeat these again in a couple of minutes' time. Or you can email them info@crimevictimshelpline.ie or find them on the website as well. Executive Director of the Crime Victims Helpline on their annual report 2021, Michelle Pacaber. Nice talking to you, Michelle.
Nice talking to you. Thank you.
Thank
so much,
you Sam. Indeed, and good morning to you, Kira. You have the spokesperson of the National Private and Hire Taxi Association with you.
Yes.
There you are now, Kira. Sorry.
Jim Waldron does join me this morning. The fare increase weighted in favour of those working on social hours. That is expected to entice drivers back into city centres during the busy weekend evenings. Jim, good morning. Do you think this will make a difference?
Good morning, Kira. It'll obviously help taxi drivers in general. It's a fare increase that's been long overdue. But in regards to the nighttime surge, shall we say, I think there are a lot more things that could be done by the National Transport and the different various councils. I think better taxi ranks, better located taxi ranks, better lighting and more security at taxi ranks so as people can wait in comfort. And maybe even if the taxi ranks were marshalled at peak times, that would encourage taxi drivers to go towards the taxi ranks and maybe feel safer themselves trying to pick up passengers. Because, as you know, there's been a lot of violence towards taxi drivers over the years. And that's the main reason why taxi drivers aren't working at night time.
You're speaking about marshalling. Are you talking about having a marshal there during these unsocial hours?
Absolutely, yeah. Why not? It was done before. So
tell me about it before. When did this happen?
Well, it happened prior to deregulation 2000, when there was, back then when there were queues for taxis, people, the ranks were marshalled basically and people were allocated to taxi when the taxis pulled up. And in a sense, for a taxi driver, it's a form of vetting a passenger getting into a car because everybody is worried about who gets into their car. So if there's a taxi rank properly lit up, properly secure, maybe CCTV or something like that on it as well, and then you know that the passenger getting into a car is reasonably safe, shall we say, despite maybe being still drunk or whatever else, but at least you would think that they're reasonably the right passenger that you want rather than the trouble that you could face.
Yeah, and we can completely understand, you know, the risk taxi drivers are taking by letting people into their car. And, you know, we hear about horrible situations. We also hear about horrible situations in terms of those looking for the taxis. I heard just a story over the past few days in a local town in the county, somebody trying to or attempting to travel. I think it was about 3 or 4 kilometres was their full journey. And they used one of the apps during unsocial hours, and it was €29 to travel that amount. The prices themselves, it is putting people off booking a taxi, and it's also putting them potentially in danger. How do we deal with that, Jim?
Well, firstly, the price shouldn't vary. The price is what's on the meter. If an app company is charging you more than the going rate, they're overcharging you. Taxi drivers are allowed to charge what's on the meter. The cost of the journey is calculated by the National Transport Authority. They set down the regulated fare. It's going up 12% on the 4th of September. It's been long overdue. We were due one back in 2018. €29 for a 4 kilometre journey sounds a lot to me, to be perfectly honest. But if we stick with what we call licensed regulated taxis, that's what you get. If you use apps, I don't know what you're getting, to be perfectly honest with you, sometimes, like, you know.
And in regards to the licensed and regulated taxi drivers, I've had experience when I'm calling one up and, you know, you're waiting 45 minutes an hour. During unsocial hours, you don't want to be waiting, you know, 45 minutes an hour to get into a taxi. That's not the taxi driver's fault, but that is why people reach for things like the apps, etc. How do we finally just deal with that side of things? Because it's massive weight for people.
But Ciara, it's probably only it generally is only the 2 hours on Friday night and Saturday night, maybe Sunday night as well, from midnight till maybe 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning. That's the time. Now, what we need to do there is maybe when there's events on, like, which obviously adds to the amount of traffic or passengers that taxi drivers get, that these events are marshalled properly, that there's taxi ranks available for people to go and pick them up, that taxis don't have to queue another traffic to get to the location so as to get people in and out. Like, all of these things have to be thought through. It's just not a matter of there's no taxis for 2 hours on a Friday night. There's plenty of taxis every other hour of the day, but there's tens of thousands of people looking for a taxi at that particular time. So we have to approach in a different way. It's not just there's not enough taxis. The fact that there's no other transport is a big input into that. So we have to look at it as an overall. But you also have to look at, is the driver feeling safe? That's where I'm coming from. You know, the passenger waiting 45 minutes is not feeling safe in the street. And if drivers felt safe or going to work, well, then you mightn't have to wait 45 minutes. You might wait 30 minutes or whatever. But there has to be an acceptable time at that hour of the evening for people to wait, because we'll never have enough taxis for everybody at that time. Never. You know, you just have to think about it. Like, there was 27,000 taxis, I think it was in the year 2002. There's now only 20,000. 7,000 drivers have left the industry. And they left the industry over the last 20 years mainly because of the safety. They didn't want it. They didn't feel safe in their workplace. And we have to address that before we address it's part of the solution to get more taxis out at unsociable hours.
Okay, we appreciate your time as always. That is a spokesperson for the National Private and Hire Taxi Association, Jim Waldron.
Indeed. Thanks, Ciara. Thanks, Jim, as well. Yeah, difficult times late at night. And Jim makes a very good point there in regards to the consumer needs a better service. But taxi drivers have to put up with a lot of stuff, particularly late at night as well. I mean, the state of their cars can be left in, with people getting in drunk and the abuse that can be thrown and everything else. So yeah, two sides to the story, well presented by Jim Waldron there. Thank you for that, Jim. Just before we go to Ciara on World Overshoot Day, I wanted to catch up with a couple of your messages again, and thank you indeed for those who are continuing to send in messages. You all know who you are, and I won't go into too much detail on that. Now, did you know that today is the day that humanity, on this day, we have, as human beings all around the world, consumed all that the earth can sustainably produce for a whole year? In other words, for the next 5 months, we are consuming the produce of this planet beyond what we should be consuming, or beyond which nature can replenish in a single year. The day is called Earth Overshoot Day. It marks the tipping point when people have used up all that ecosystems can regenerate in 1 year. That's according to the World Wildlife Fund and an organisation called Global Footprint Network. From January 1st to today, July 28th, humanity has used as much from nature as the planet can renew in an entire year. That's why today is called World Overshoot Day. The Earth has a lot of stock, so we can deplete Earth for some time, but we cannot overuse it forever, says a spokesperson. It would take 1.75 Earths, if you like, what we produce in a year, to provide for the world's population in a sustainable way. To put it in simplest terms, we are consuming at a rate that the globe cannot reproduce in a single year. That's what means when we say it's unsustainable. And Ciara, you have some stats indeed that show how fast, and we dealt with this report recently in regards to the accelerating global biodiversity crisis. You have some stats around the rate that we are consuming. on this planet.
Yeah, yeah, we did go through it before, Clem. So just the main points I'm going to touch on. Globally, approximately 50,000 wild species are used for food, energy, medicine, material and other purposes. That's through fishing, gathering, logging and terrestrial animal harvesting. Over 10,000 wild species are harvested for human food, with 1 in 5 people dependent on such species for income and food. About 70% of the world's poor are directly dependent on wild species and on businesses that are fostered by them. Humans, they directly consume or use 7,500 species of wild fish and aquatic invertebrates, 31,100 species of wild plants, that includes 7,400 trees, 1,500 species of fungi and 7,400 species of wild trees, 1,700 species of wild land-based invertebrates and 7,500 species of wild amphibians, reptiles, birds and mammals.
And as the three government parties continue to debate, you know, to deal with our emissions crisis and what the reduction in emissions rate will be, whether it's going to be in the 24, 25, 26 or up to 30% as the government promised. It's not going to be that now. Ireland is an outlier in Europe, by the way. We are the worst country, as I understand it from recent reports, with the highest amount of emissions. And most of those emissions are coming from agriculture and transport. And the government at the moment, with Minister Charlie McConnellogue, the agriculture minister, saying yesterday he will not go above 24% in terms of the reduction of emissions. Some in the Green Party saying this could threaten the government. Well, we expect some sort of resolution today. We'll see what the percentage is. But this report on World Overshoot Day says a large part of the food and raw materials are used to feed animals and animals that are consumed afterwards. In the EU, 63% of arable land is directly associated with animal production. Agriculture contributes to deforestation, climate change by emitting greenhouse gases, loss of biodiversity and degradation of ecosystems while using a significant share of fresh water. If we could cut meat consumption by half, we could move the date of the overshoot by 17 days, says the Global Footprint Network. But the bottom line is we're consuming at a rate that the planet cannot sustain, Ciara.
Yeah, Clem, I've had one listener call in this morning about emissions and they're touching on wind energy in particular. They want answers from the government. They say when you go onto AirGrid, currently electricity in this country is powered by 4% of wind energy, and they're saying we need more answers to that and we need to sort out that situation, as wind could be very beneficial to the country.
There you have it. Mind the planet, folks.